Welcome to Hope Leads. I'm Wes Lane. A lot of people feel overwhelmed, stuck, and confused. This podcast is designed to give you hope and perspective so that you can live a powerfully relevant life. Because within the context of a loving and relentlessly purposeful God, we believe your best days are still ahead of you. To celebrate Black History Month, we're talking to four people who are making history in this city. And I'm joined today by my incredible co-host, Mrs. Taylor West.
Well, that is me. Thank you very much, Wes Lane. How's it going today?
It's going great. It's just been a delightful day.
Wes, I love your jacket. When Hunter, my husband, for the listeners, when he was getting ready, he put on a jacket just like that. And he actually said, I feel like Wes Lane. And he's wearing the same one.
Which is a little scary. So he thinks he's like put on 40 years or something like that.
I was telling him, Hunter, you can shoot higher than that.
Grandfatherly now, you know, or something. So, no. Well, he's got great taste, clearly.
Yes. I love it. So today we're talking to Debrion Davis. So Wes, we've talked a bit about childhood Wes in some of our other episodes, but high school is a whole new territory. What are three words that epitomize high school Wes?
I hated it. There's my three words.
Why did you hate high school?
I'm trying to come up with something more positive here, but when I hear that,
kind of
like
a dark time.
It was not good. I mean, there's a lot of pressure when you're a kid.
Absolutely.
I mean, I know you remember this better than I do. It's much more close for you than it was for me. But it was a lot of pressure. I mean, I remember trying to be. You know, you want people to like you and all of this stuff. And it was a small school and, I mean, a wonderful school, but I had gone from being a nerd to being a little young and immature.
With the pocket protector.
So ultimately, I had to repeat ninth grade.
And
it was because the principal thought that this would help me grow up because I was kind of young and I was really shy and all that sort of stuff. Well, it just kind of unleashed, you know, class clown city. And so the whole pressure of just trying to be funny and being liked but they always knew me as a nerd. So then you're in the group. Then I'm with the class of the kids that used to try to beat me up. I mean, I wish I could have witnessed this.
So Debrion talked about how education wasn't her original plan, that she actually wanted to go into counseling. I can relate to the Lord changing things up on me for sure. So my bachelor's is actually in therapeutic medicine, and I was planning on going to grad school for occupational therapy. That is, until the Lord said, nope, try social work, and he led me into the nonprofit world. Do you have a similar experience with your career plans changing, Wes?
Well, yeah, a small one. It's called losing an election.
That'll do it.
Yes, that was a small career change for me. And so it's called leaving the practice of law. And saying, okay, what's next, God? Yes, but he knows what he's doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, somebody actually knows what they're doing here, even if we don't.
His plans are always better. Thankfully, he's in charge and we're not, right?
That's been I'm depending on it.
Yes. So you guys talked a lot about a word for the year. I do that too. Do you have one for this year by chance?
Well, you know, as a matter of fact, I do. I've not made a habit of having a word for the year, but... Mm-hmm. But that conversation has come up several times, not just with Debrion, but with others. And so, the word for 2020, it's ascend, ascend. And what that's really about is that, you know, in our walk with God, at least with mine, he's always teaching us stuff.
Yeah.
And we come to these moments or these fullness of time moments in which you feel like, at least... This is what I think is happening right now. There is just this sense of his willingness now for us to take things to a higher level of impact. And so whether it's with our organization, SALT, or whether it's with me personally and what is my calling, or knowing what it is rather, it's how do I up my game? And it's more the sense. So I don't say that. I don't say a sin like, well, we're just... Look at us. I'm really talking about more. No, I think the Lord is willing for us to ascend to new heights this year. And so I'm pressing into that purposefully.
Absolutely. That's really good. I'm going to have you help me come up with my word for the year from now on.
So what is it? Okay, so you said you had a word at the get-go. I started it. What is it?
I do have a word for the year. So this year it's savor.
Savor?
Yeah.
Savor. Okay.
Yeah. I feel like I'm a very much an all or nothing person. And so I'm either...
A what? A word?
All or nothing.
All or nothing. Okay. Uh-huh. Okay.
And so I'm either go, or like in my downtime. And so, and like, especially at work specifically. So I'll just try to power through and get everything done so I can relax. But I'm really trying to like be more consistent and savor every moment. And instead of just powering through, really enjoying what the Lord's given me.
That's actually a great one.
Thank you.
Savoring, you know, life is not to be gulped, it's to be sipped.
Absolutely.
And so, no, that's a great word.
Well, Wes, I'm excited to savor this conversation with Debrion Davis. Are you ready for it?
I am. Well, let's just go right on into my chat with Debrion Davis on Release More, Lead Better. This month is Black History Month, and I'm so pleased that every week this month I'm getting the privilege of having a conversation with someone who not only knows something about Black history and lived it, but continue to make history themselves and how they're walking out a purposeful life, generating hope for others. I first met Debrion Davis a few years ago when she participated in our SALT Emerging Leaders program. She's been something of an inspiration to others as she at an early age has become the principal of one of the leading public high schools in the greater Oklahoma City area. A pretty remarkable feat, really, and a testament to how she's regarded within the education community. So, Debrion Davis, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I'm pumped. Welcome. I'm just really tickled that you could do this. And we are actually this is our first time on location.
On the road.
That's right. We are at the high school itself. We've put the strict warning sign out. Nobody but bug the principal.
That's right. Closed doors.
That's right. That's right. Well, okay. Well, you know, in getting this conversation going, if you would just share a little bit, as I just said, you're a principal at one of the Edmund North High School, one of the big high schools.
Yes.
And so, you're a young woman. And of course, with my age, it's young is pretty relative. Everybody's looking pretty young to me, but you really are. And this is a real testament to what folks think of you. Why don't you share with us, first of all, how is it that you're here in the realm of education? I know that wasn't the first plan for you.
It wasn't. You are exactly right. How did I end up here at Edmund North? Well, it's a fun story. I actually went to high school in Edmund. I went to Santa Fe, one of the other high schools here in town. And when I graduated, I studied psychology. So I thought I was going to be a counselor, had every intention of doing that. Did not at all have teaching on my radar at all. I come from a family of educators. My grandmother actually taught in Oklahoma City for 40 years. My mom works at one of the high schools in town. My older sister is a elementary school principal in Rhode Island. My sister-in-law is a orchestra teacher. My dad teaches classes at community colleges. Man. And so I thought that I just wasn't going to do what everyone else in the family did.
Not me.
But it became very clear late in my college career, actually, a few weeks before I was going to graduate. I woke up one morning and really felt like God was saying, you're going to be a teacher. So I went through that process and became a teacher. I taught for 4 years, got my master's degree while teaching, and just really fell in love with leadership. I knew that education was my passion. I love teenagers. They are my most favorite human. I know that might sound crazy,
look what you do. They ought to be.
But I really love spending my days with them. So I taught for 4 years, was an assistant principal at Memorial High School in Edmond for 5 years, and I'm in my third year now as the principal here at North.
Well, one time when we and a group of us were having dinner about a year or so ago, what I didn't know about you, in the room at the table was a guy from another school who was the athletic director actually at the time with yes. Oklahoma City Public Schools, and he knew you immediately by your reputation as a high school basketball player.
I could
something
throw it
about
down
your elbows.
Yes, I like to make sure people were aware that if they were in the paint, they were in my paint, and so just gave them a little nudge from time to time with the elbows.
Small nudge.
You know, when the ref wasn't looking, no big deal. It's all fun.
Yeah, glory to God.
Yes, amen. That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
Okay, so. Well, then, so you found yourself then wanting to become getting in the education realm, which was really not your original thought, but
correct.
But there you are.
Yes.
So what was the path on that? So you're a principal now.
I am.
And so how did you find your way? I mean, especially at your young age.
Yes. I knew that I loved leadership. I just found myself naturally falling into positions of leadership and God just really opening the doors. I give all credit to God in this because I was hired at a very young age of 30 to be the head principal here at Edmund North.
Yeah.
And so I never would have imagined that this process would have happened so quickly.
Oh, it's remarkable.
But knew that he was leading and guiding every step and really just with open hands following him and where he was leading. And if he said go, energetically saying yes.
What was the hardest part of transition between, I know you were an assistant principal
yes.
for a while
yep.
at another high school,
yes.
I guess. And then, but now you're in the hot seat.
Yeah.
There's a difference.
Yeah. So the lens changes, right? So when you are a teacher, you're concerned about your classroom. So you've got 30 kids that you've got 5 or 6 classes a day that you're concerned about. And then when you become an assistant principal, your view goes a little bit wider as to what you're thinking about. But when you're the head principal, you're thinking about everything. It's the whole picture, the whole community, the entire school that we're wanting to make sure we're taking care of, the community aspect as well, reaching out to our stakeholders in our community. There's the legislative side and political side of education that you now have to be aware of. So it very quickly went from you're worried about your 30 to you're worried about a couple thousand to you're worried about thousands.
Yeah.
And just the ripple effect of your impact that can have on a community.
Well, just from personal experience as having been an assistant and then sitting in the hot seat before, one of the big things I noticed about the transition was that when I was finally at the top of the heap like you are, there was no one to pass the buck to.
Correct.
And then
yes.
I suddenly found that when I said no, I mean, I was in a position to
right.
say no,
right.
and then suddenly not everybody liked me as much.
This is very true. And leadership, not everyone's going to like you all the time in any type of leadership, specifically in the school. I have to make decisions for the best of everyone and looking out for all 2,600 kids that I have here. So when I make a decision, it's not just based on one. It's based on what's best for the whole. And then there are times, obviously, when we're making specific decisions for students and for teachers, but I have to always be thinking about its entirety and also thinking, 3 to 5 years down the line as well as for what's to come and how do we prepare for what's to come.
So when you got started here then as a principal, as we chatted about that there were some obstacles mm-hmm. along the path. I mean,
yes.
some, as there always are.
Always.
That's
always,
right.
Always,
don't,
yes.
They don't go away.
Yes.
So share with that, because that's really going to lead us up to the conversation I'm really looking forward to having with you
yes.
about a principle, mm-hmm. not of a school, but an axiom
right.
Of living
right.
a purposeful life. So what were those obstacles?
The first one would be the most obvious was age of just coming in and being, I could be the daughter of a lot of people who are, I'm now leading and who are my staff. And so just that time to build relationship and trust and to come in and for people to really learn who I am and someone who leads out of love. And when I tell my staff, I love them, that I mean it with my whole heart and for them to have to the opportunity to have the time to get to know that I'm serious about that and who I am. So me not being insecure in myself of discrediting myself because of my age,
yeah.
Obviously God knew what he was doing and allowing me to have this position and trusting me with this position. So that was a very big obstacle. Another one was racial tension, honestly, mm-hmm. to come in, I'm a black female, and mm-hmm. to come into a predominantly white area and be the leader and seeing that tension between me and students, between me and some of our community, and also just within our student body itself, and that being a very real issue and something that we have to be able to address and talk about as well, that we can't shy away from that conversation, and realizing how much my representation meant here as well to our minority students, because a lot of them had never sat under minority leadership before, really all of my students. Some of them had not sat under minority leadership before. So those were two pretty big obstacles in that first year of just learning, along with learning the building itself, learning what it is to be in the hot seat, to be in charge, to be the head principal, to lead and love well, and to try to find something, that magical word balance that people talk about, and not doing a very good job of that, to be honest, in my first year of balancing life with all things.
Did you find that, did any of those two obstacles, whether age or race, did either one of those come as a surprise to you, or did it just... or what?
A surprise? No. Working in this field, there's absolutely nothing that surprises me. When you work with teenagers every day.
2,500 teenagers coming to the building every day, right?
Yes. No, definitely not a surprise. I think the magnitude and maybe the emotional toll that it was going to take on me was something that I hadn't thought about. And given myself space to prepare for, would have been what was kind of surprising, I would say.
Well, in all honesty, you know, I think a lot of people like me, for example, are always, I shouldn't say surprised, because you're right. Nothing much. When you're around a lot of humans for a long time, especially when you prosecute them for,
I can imagine,
20 years.
Yes.
You never should be surprised at what people will do.
Yes.
But in this case, I think that a lot of white people that mean well don't think of themselves as racist. They don't really think that's going on, because they wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And so it's always a little bit like, what? Mm-hmm. They said what to you? Mm-hmm. And I know I don't know if you run across folks before that they're a little bit, I guess you might say, naive.
Yes.
About this taking place.
Yes, all of the time. And I think sometimes the mentality is, if I don't do it, it's not happening.
Yeah.
Or if I don't hear the crowd that I'm around talking about that or talking about it, then it's not happening. When the reality is that it is. And I would always encourage people to look at the circle of people who are around you. And if they all look like you, then you don't know the reality of what's really happening in the world and to others, because you don't have a diversity of experience with what's around you. So yes, I encounter naive people in all aspects of life, but definitely specific to racial tension and race relations. It's something that is definitely encountered.
Well, all credit to the Edmond Public Schools. I mean, they knew what they were doing, and you were the one sent into the breach.
Yes.
And so, how you mentioned a minute ago that dealing with older versus younger, for example, that a big press was just you're really working to help these folks know that, hey, I really do love you. I care about you.
Yes.
I'm not just here to be your boss.
Yes.
What about with the racism issue? How did you deal with that? How did it manifest anyway?
There are subtle things that happened, and things that were said. You can read a room. You can read the tension in a room when you walk in, or if someone comes into my office and questions, if I have the credentials to be there. Things that were said to me over the phone by people, said in person, things that have happened within the student body, not just here but in the town in general. There were multiple instances, and as a staff, we address things head on, and so I believe in let's have honest conversations. And so when I came in, just letting my staff learn that's who I am as a person, and if there's an issue, we're going to address it, and we're going to talk about it, and we're going to identify ways that we can grow as a staff and as a school. And so we've had professional development opportunities here where we are focusing on making sure that every single one of our students receives an equitable educational experience while they are here, and that we celebrate who they are. So my motto that I brought in when I came in as a principal is, we will respect, honor, and seek to understand every single student who walks through our doors. And I say that to my staff, and I remind my staff of that every single time I'm in front of them, is that our kids walk in with stories that are worthy to be heard and listened to. And that part, seeking to understand, that we will resolve to seek to understand every single one of our kids, no matter what color their skin is, no matter what their religious beliefs are, no matter how they choose to wear their hair, what color their hair is. We are going to get to know every single kid's story, so that they feel safe and that we can create a learning environment here where they can thrive, because they deserve that.
How do you go about that, though?
Consistently showing up every day and modeling it. And so for me, I have to model to my staff that I love them, I see them, and I care about them, and that they have a story that's worth getting to know. So showing up for them, stopping by their rooms on their planning hour just to say hi, being available. For me, it was hard to be transparent with them about myself. I'm a very guarded, private person. And so to open up to 150 staff members.
You're drinking your own medicine here.
Right, yes. I have to actually walk the walk and not just tell them what I want them to do, but I have to also be transparent and open with them and let them know a little bit of my story and get to know their story to empower them to do the same for our students. There's only one of me. There are 150 of them, and there are 2,600 kids. And so the change is happening in the classroom where the relationship is being built. So for them to have it modeled from their leader of what that looks like, and that it's okay to step into uncomfortable conversations and to ask questions to get to know someone and understand their story.
You mentioned once to me and it was really interesting, your concern about what kids are going through. And of course, I think even any of us remember how awkward that whole time was.
Yes.
Like, oh my gosh. But you talked about what you referred to as something of a spirit of comparison. Would you explain that? And the challenge to overcome that and to really love through that, because what was really interesting was you said, you have 2,600 kids that don't want to be here with these people. They don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not necessarily their circle. So share that, would you?
Definitely. So I tell the kids all the time, they walk around with these computers in their pocket that we call cell phones. And so that's added a whole nother, social media has added this whole other layer of the ability to quickly be compared with someone around you. And so that's one, a huge thing that our kids are facing every single day is the comparison of what are they posting? Did they get as many likes as I got? More people are following, their TikTok is more popular than mine is. All of these things that are right now a part of our culture that these kids are being engulfed by, with wanting to compare themselves to others. When we talk about academically, it's interesting with academics. If you get the scholarship, that means I don't. And so there's this individualism of I want to succeed, and I don't necessarily also want you to. And so how can we combat that to be encouraging of one another all of the time? Wanting to have friends and wanting to be a part of that popular crowd, and in all of that, them forgetting that they each are individual humans who have worth and have value, and that goes far deeper than how many likes you have on your social media and if you got the scholarship or not. And so teaching them and creating space for them to learn that you are a valuable human because you exist. I don't have to add anything else to that, but because you exist, you are a human who has value and who has worth.
But all right, so there are people out there listening right now who doubtless they either have teenage kids or they know teenage kids. They're probably or they're uncomfortable around teenage kids.
Yes,
I mean it's like. In fact, that was something you commented, I think, to me once before as well. As it was the. it was pressing in and loving them, even if they don't, even if the body language says
they don't want you there.
No,
yes,
yeah, go away.
Yes, yeah.
But what does that look like to actually walk that out? What would you say to somebody who's listening right now, who's thinking, "Oh gosh, I couldn't do that. That is so intimidating." I mean, people are intimidated about unfamiliar scenarios.
Definitely.
What do you say?
So specifically with teenagers, showing up, being consistent with them is huge. They can see right through you. If you are being fake, they see right through it and they call you out on it. Like they have no shame at all. And I love it. I absolutely love it because I'll just call it right back out to them. Like we'll just have that banter back and forth. It's fun.
I can see it.
Yes. But consistently showing up and being authentic in who you are to them. A thing I like to tell my teachers and my assistant principals is learning to linger in that silence with them. And it might seem uncomfortable at first, but in order for someone to speak and in order for someone to share, you have to first create the space for them to do it. And so if we're always trying to to fill the space and I have to do, but with teenagers, sometimes you just have to be present with them and give them the space to open up, and over time trust and learn that through the relationship, through the consistency of you showing up, that you are a safe person to them, that you are a safe space. And then there'll be that magical moment where they just start talking to you and you might realize that you have something in common, and then that connection is formed. And then they won't stop talking to you, and there you go.
You know, something for a guy like me who always has felt uncomfortable with just stony silence.
Yes,
I've always felt the need. You know, I got to entertain this person, yeah. or I got to fill the air with something. When I was a high schooler, I was always trying to be funny because I wanted to be accepted, and so I was the class cut up and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. What you're saying is that you don't have to be Miss or Mr. Entertainment.
Correct.
Just be there.
Our lives are so loud. I think sometimes we need permission to just be still and be human and let come out what comes out. And we have to be, I think, more intentional about creating those moments of silence and space for us to just be.
Well, let me tell you, I bet there's some people out there that have taken that comment to the bank. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, what a relief. I don't have to perform. I don't have a performance anxiety going when I'm around these kids. And even though they're not acting like it, in fact, they might look exactly like they don't want you there. In reality, that's just not true.
Correct. It's not. They want you, I promise.
That's pretty comforting. I wish I could dial the clock back about two decades. Okay, so... Well, when we think about the process of personal growth and how we deal with, you know, you're a leader. And God brings us through a process of that. I mean, of course, you're either one or you're not. But if you want to be one, you really got to be very purposeful about that. You shared with me about your coming up with keywords and then, as you say, giving God space. And this has been a practice of yours for several years. And I want you to share that because I think this is as a practical, how do you help yourself in your desire for success? How do you give God space to help you be successful?
Yes.
So tell us about that.
Yeah, definitely. So this is a process I started 5 years ago with selecting a word that I wanted to focus on for every year. It actually started with a woman who was mentoring me, a group of young ladies and I, and she picks a word every year and she asked us if we had ever done it. And I said, no, I've never done that. And she explained that she would just pray and create space for God to speak to her on where he wanted her to focus for the year. And so the first year I did it, my word was discipline, and just learning what that meant. And I remember reading a book about about 12 spiritual disciplines and just wanting to learn what the word discipline meant in many different aspects. And so since then, I've just created this rhythm of every January creating a time of fasting and praying to just get rid of the noise of the world and mm-hmm. to see what God is really speaking into me and where He wanted me to focus for that year. So it's been an amazing experience to see in November and December how it's like, oh, that's why this was the word for the year.
Months down the line, yes, you're going, oh, now I get it. I really did hear
God. And it not just being a New Year's resolution, right? Of like, right, I'm going to go to the
big
gym
difference.
And then March comes and I'm not at the gym, right?
Yeah,
it's,
right.
It's, this is, I'm going to focus on this every single day. I'm going to ask God to show me how He wants to move in me every single day. And really seeing so much growth and trust in God through this process of just creating this space for Him to fill and for Him to speak into me and show me what He wants me to focus on for that year.
So let's break this down just a little bit then.
Yes.
And get into the process thereof. Like, for instance, you said that you fast, you pray. I mean, do you get away? Do you stay home? I mean, what does it look like? And what are you asking Him?
Yes.
Did you know it doesn't take a majority to create change? All you need is 10% of the population and change happens. Hope Culture is a community building a movement to create a life of hope for every person in this community. You don't have to just talk about hope. You can wear hope because Hope Culture's beautiful apparel line does just that. In this revolution, Hope Culture is the flag you wear. Go to Hope Culture, that's one word, hopeculture.us. For every item you take home from the Hope Culture apparel line, 50% goes back to the city. So go today and join the 10% of the people leading the charge, the 10% who speak with their lives. Hope is the culture. Go to hopeculture.us. That's hopeculture.us.
Yes. Yeah, so I found that it usually happens when I'm coming back from traveling. So every year for Christmas, I go visit my sister. She lives on the East Coast. And I found that most times I hear the word or someone else that says the word, I'm like, oh, that's it. When I am on the plane flying back mm-hmm. from visiting my sister. Mm-hmm. And it happens just after I've had that time of release, that time of rest. I'm just quiet. I can quiet the noise. I'm with my family. I'm refreshed and rejuvenated. Mm-hmm. And God just speaks a fresh word over me in that flight back home.
So I'd be looking forward to that plane flight every year.
Every time.
Are you actually kind of aware of that now? They're like, okay, I'm on the ride.
I actually just thought about it in this moment when you asked me.
Okay, to be honest. Time.
Yes. I also love traveling and I love airplanes and all of the things. I'm watching the humans, so it's enjoyable for me to fly back home. I also have two starts of the year. So I celebrate New Year's twice. I have New Year's in January when we have a new physical year of mm-hmm. like coming into 2020. But being an educator, my calendar actually runs from August to May. And mm-hmm. so I practice the same thing over the summer and getting away and just creating space to allow God to speak over me what He mm-hmm. would like me to focus on for the school year with my school and my staff as well. So in January, where is God taking me for this year? And in the summer, it's God, where are you taking the school for this school year?
Okay.
And just creating space.
One
for
is
that.
Personal and one is vocational.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
And so when you're hearing are they two different words? Or are they the same word, but as applied to me personally, as applied to my vocation?
Here. Yes. So the word is for me personally over the entire year, let's say 2019, 2020. Okay. When I get away in the summer, it's where do you want us to focus as a staff? Mm-hmm. And what direction do you want me to lead our staff in this year? God, give me your heart for this school and where I need to focus and to grow me as a leader. Because it's very easy for me to just get stuck in the routine of the day to day. As a principal, you don't get the summers off. And so I'm not up here. I'm not chilling by the pool all summer. I'm up here working. Yes. And staffing the building, finishing the master schedule, things like that during the summer. And so I have to be intentional about creating time away and getting space, or I could very easily work from May to August and never have rested.
Yeah.
And then I'm coming back and my kids are coming back. My staff is coming back and they don't have all of me.
And that's That's a major biblical principle right there.
Yes.
You know, God does not require us to drive ourselves into the ground.
Yes.
I mean, he said, hey, my yoke is easy, my burden's light, and there's a reason for that.
Right.
I'm the one who does the work.
That's right.
You just show up.
Yes.
Well, but let me understand something. So I know there are two points, but there's one word for the year.
Correct.
When you hear that word and that begins, is that the that's in January?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Then you're taking that word and then what I'm hearing is that you're then drilling down on that.
Yes. So it's truly me asking God, what are you trying to show me here? How are you trying to grow me here? How does this word apply to my life this year? And what would you have me do? Mm-hmm. And so my word for 2019, that's also going into 2020, mm-hmm. Is the word release. Mm-hmm. And it was at such a beautiful time for me of realizing specifically with my job and my life, I love to be in control. Like I really do enjoy being in control.
You're
of things.
You're a control person?
Maybe.
What?
It's possible. I love making decisions. Like I enjoy making decisions and helping other people make decisions and, just lead. I love to lead. I love and enjoy leadership. And sometimes that means I'm walking around with my fists clenched and wanting things done a specific way and wanting to always be in control. And if there's one thing that this job specifically has taught me is that I'm not in control of anything.
Yeah.
I walk into school every single day with what I think I'm going to accomplish for that day. And then 2,600 teenagers walk in. And so what I thought I was going to accomplish probably isn't going to happen because there's 2,600 needs that are also walking mm-hmm. into the room as well. So this word release, it came at a beautiful time of me. There was three parts to it, a release from things, mm-hmm. a release of things, and to be released into new things.
Mm-hmm.
And me really feeling like God is using that word for 2020 as well, that I'm not finished with learning this process of release.
Well, it's huge. That's probably one of the most profound spiritual principles that certainly I've experienced mm-hmm. in my walk is just that.
Yes.
It's like learning to take your hand off the steering wheel.
Yeah.
And maybe not even sit in the seat. How about?
Right.
That is weird for type A people.
Yes.
But how's it working for you?
It's great. it's been a process for sure. I've had to have this daily reminder of me not being in control. So when I walk into school every day, I look up at the Edmund North High School sign and say, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done." And it's just this verbal release for me every single day that I can't hold on to this place. And I can't control what happens to my kids every single day. And I can't map out this perfect path for them. I have to release and know that God is in control of everything because I want everything to be perfect for them. I want everything to be perfect for my staff. I want everything to be perfect for my friends and my family. But I have to unclench my fist and let go and release and create space and to allow God to move in my life and let go of all of the things that I'm holding on to allow him to call me into new things as well.
You know, I had a spiritual mentor. The guy is old enough to be my father. I mean, how do you think that is?
Very young.
You very much. Here's a dollar. But he told me a great story one time, and it was a story of a man that his secretary was wondering on his calendar. He would always finish the day, and he would write the initials AUG. And she wondered, what is that? And she finally asked him, and he said, "Here's the deal. I try to get done what I think I can do, but then I just let go and I write approved unto God at the end of the day.
Wow,
and I leave it behind."
Mm-hmm.
And that was just so inspiring
to
me. I mean, I identify with what you're talking about. I literally pray in the morning, "Lord, just help me to get done today what you need me to do today."
Yes.
And I'm good.
Yes.
You know, now,
yes.
I don't always believe that.
But, right.
But I'm working on it. I'm much better than I was.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you one thing, too, that is a real common deal. And that's hearing God's voice. Mm-hmm. You have been talking about hearing God, doing that. What does that look like? So, I mean, so many, I was like this, I'm telling you, what? How do you, just straining, trying yes. to hear that. So, but yes. it's not like that.
Yeah. I hear God's voice in a lot of different ways. One of my most favorite places to be is, this is going to sound crazy for anyone who doesn't work in a high school, but is to stand in the hallway in the middle of passing time when all of the kids are, like, every passing time I make a point to be out there. Unless I'm in a meeting or off campus, I'm in the hallway during passing time when the kids are going from class to mm-hmm. class. And it is one of the sweetest times that I have with the Lord when all really? Of the kids are walking past me, because you can just feel the stories that are coming with them and the burdens that they're carrying. You get to see them, and you get to see them in their time that's theirs. So their 5-minute passing is where they can, they're not on the spot in class. They get to talk to their friends. They get to use their cell phones. They can't have their cell phones out in class. And so it's their 5 minutes of freedom, per se, yeah. In between classes. And most adults who walk into a high school as they're like battling the hallway despise passing time, but I love it because it's just this sweet time of God speaking to me and over the students here at school. I love it. That's one of the most common ways and times when God speaks to me.
We've also mentioned too that there have been Bible verses that have, you know, God speaking through
yes.
His Word.
Yes, specifically for the word release, the verses in Hebrews. It's Hebrews 12:1. I don't want to misquote it. It says,
"Oh, you've got it written very good."
I do.
You're like me.
Ready.
No, yes, there you go. That's what I do.
It says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. And the part of that is the release part of that for me yeah. is where it says, let us throw off everything that hinders us and the sin that so easily entangles us. And just really reading and studying that and examining my life and all of the things that I was holding on to, that were hindering me from where mm-hmm. God had me going, things I needed to be released from, the bondage of things that I needed to be released from and to let go of, mm-hmm. So that I could be released into new things. And the trusting that when I let go, that there was something better that God had for me. Mm-hmm. And that's been one of the hardest things is to, we really love to be comfortable
yes.
and letting go and trusting is very yeah. uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And so trusting God with that every single day that I'm going to release this to you. I'm going to let go of things that have happened in the past. I'm going to believe that you are a healer and that you can make everyone whole and complete, and just a continuous release every single day of throwing off the things that are hindering us. And then the end of that verse that I love, it says, fixing our eyes on Jesus. And there's a worship song that says, my gaze transfixed on Jesus' face, and choosing to just look at Jesus. Yeah. And what there's so many distractions in this world that we can choose to look at, but saying, I release all of these things and I'm choosing to fix my eyes on Jesus' face.
Boy, there's one other thing as you were talking, it occurred to me so many times, people, they think it's God talking, but God doesn't talk smack to us. He will speak like a loving parent.
Yes.
and it will be convicting
yes.
and it won't be fun, but it's always in love.
It's love. Mm-hmm.
And if you are wondering, well, I mean, God does not do guilt and shame, does not do all that. But like I said, I mean, he wants you successful. And I remember one time early on when I was trying to discern God's voice, and the first phrase I remember was, rest in me. And I went, what?
What? Yeah. What are you talking about?
That's exactly
what I have time for that. Yes.
That's right. That is not my style.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? So for those of you listening, and I hope you're really just, don't wait for everything to get perfect on learning how to walk with God, listening to his voice. Just ask him to show you the way and just take that next step in that. And so, you know, have the process of these different words? I mean, I take it. I mean, I can tell the answer, but it sounds like they've had a great deal of influence on your handling the Goliaths, if you will, that have been in your path.
Yes, yes, definitely. Release specifically is releasing all of the things that I encounter every single day as the leader of a high school, as a Black female leader of a high school, as a young Black female leader of a high school. I have to release that to God every single day and trust that He has trusted me with this position, knowing exactly what He was doing, that He's called me to this place for such a time as this. And I believe that I love these kids. Mm-hmm. I love this place. And I know that He has called me here to love them and lead them well. But I also know that I am not in control, that He is, and that I have to continue to release that to Him every single day, knowing that He's going to continue to fill my cup and the things that I let go of, that He's bringing more beautiful things in right behind that. And so it has every Goliath that I have faced, and there are many unnamed, and we all do every single day, just giving that to God and giving it to God first. It's very easy to go to others first, but to commit to God, I'm going to give this to You first. And see what You have to say about this first and trust You with that. And it has truly been life-changing for me.
Well, Debrianne, let me just tell you, you are a dealer in hope. I mean, oh my goodness. I wish I was high school. No, I wish I was in high
come
school
on.
Suddenly.
You can come
I can come
anytime.
Back. A little remedial work.
That's
I
right.
did have to repeat
You're,
ninth
everybody's
grade.
Welcome.
But
Let's
that's
come.
Another story.
anyway. There's no shame here.
There's no shame. Let me ask you one last question. So what is your hope? And when I say hope, I'm not talking about a wish, because wish you got no control over. But what's your hope for this greater metropolitan area?
Yeah.
I mean, what just that's a pretty broad question,
but
what do you hope to see as you grow older in this community?
A celebration of who everyone is and a purposeful and a mindful understanding and building of relationships to get to know the people around us. And again, I just keep going back to what I tell my staff: respect, honor, and understanding. If that's my big hope, it's that we are a people, we are a culture that becomes who we are, that we are going to commit to respect and to honor and to seek to understand everyone around us.
Well, you know, God moves at the speed of relationship.
That's right.
And that's really what you're talking about.
Yes.
It's hard to dislike or to attack the person that you actually know.
That you know. Yes. Yeah.
Well, Debrianne, thank you very much.
Thank you.
For being with us today. And let me just say this before we close up. You know, the process of becoming our best version of ourselves and fulfilling our purposes on the earth has never been meant to be an easy street. Anyone truly pressing into an alignment with our identity as beloved sons and daughters of the Creator of the universe, designed, built, and sent to the earth at a moment of history as part of God's overarching strategy to renew and redeem the earth as a place of flourishing, anyone really wanting to be successful in that is always going to be met with opposition. Change agents always get opposition. The deal is, though, God is the great personal trainer who will use all that ugly opposition, if you'll let Him, to shape and serve you for success. And I want to encourage you right now to stop looking at opposition as automatically a bad thing, but rather an opportunity to become the very best version of yourself and live a life that truly matters. I mean, what would our cities and our communities look like if we really were the best version of ourselves from Jesus' perspective? What would things look like with poverty or racism or homelessness, broken families, anything you can think of look like as a result? Well, I can tell you one thing. Some evil things would ultimately die because God's kids are in town. So if you like the thought of that, how about taking the next right step toward becoming the ultimate problem solvers by giving God space to make you who He's willing for you to become? So thanks again, Debrie and Davis, what a treat, Principal Davis.
Thank you very much. That's right.
Have you on the principal. And until then, we'll see you all next time. So let me give you some concluding thoughts. If Hope were a person in the room, what would she say to us? Well, I think, first of all, she'd say that you are fearfully and wonderfully made, that an unchanging God designed, built you, and sent you into a moment of history as part of his loving strategy to transform a chaotic world and make it good again. You are called as change agents. Hope would tell you that she flourishes when we listen to God and set goals for our lives that press us further toward becoming that person God has always been willing for us to become. Hope would tell you to set action steps towards achieving those goals. They don't have to be giant steps. Start with baby steps so you can be encouraged along the way. But Hope would also tell you that you've got to not just make plans to step, but you must exercise the willpower to just take that next right step. Step by step by step gets you to the destination God has for your life. It's the long obedience in the same direction. And finally, Hope would tell you that God sees us not as we are, but as we could become if we will dare. It's the same for our communities. As followers of Jesus, you are a sent people, and all humans should flourish because God's kids are in town. What evil thing dies because you exist? No one else is coming. You're the generation sent to your community in this moment. You're it. Press into God's purposes for your lives, and you will discover that hope abounds and that Jesus is still the God of the impossible. Thank you for joining us today on Hope Leads. I'm Wes Lane. Once again, I'd be honored if you would take a moment to rate this podcast, review it, subscribe, and share it with someone who needs hope. We want to thank Brianna Gaither for the song I Won't Rest Until from her album Vanity. Remember, you are fearfully and wonderfully made by a God who is willing for us to live meaningful lives of profound impact. I invite you to just show up and watch God show off.